that.
What happened? Oh, I see. That, I guess the logical thing to do is take just a minute. You haven't started it up yet.
That's all right. That's right.
And so we then, of these thousand topics, this number of thousand, we wrote out the names of them. And so for weeks we were arguing back and forth and thinking individually about what would be a thousand titles. Anyway, we did get organized, and by late 45 or 46, because the first volume was copyrighted, I see, in 1947, and that, and this I forgot, was by the InterScience Encyclopedia, Inc., and that was distributed by InterScience Publishers. I'd forgotten that they had these two business, they were excellent businessmen. These two businessmen separated their other activities, lest it go broke, by making a separate corporation. Anyway, after we got going, Ray and I, and Decker, and Postgauer did work on the accumulation of the writers for these thousand articles, which did come along very well, and is. You see, as I say, the first volume did come out in 47, pretty much as we had planned. This went along, and
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you say something about how Kirk was to work with when you were selecting these thousand topics? How long did it take you to come up with your master list?
Well, obviously. The realization we didn't need to plan everything a priori, that we did pick out the first volume or two definitely, of course, or maybe the first three volumes definitely, and we spent most of the thoughts on that, and the rest of it was sort of terra incognito that we realized was there, but we didn't need to have Venus, was it Venus that rose from the ocean in full panoply of armor? we could birth, let her birth and grow. And so that's what we did. We obviously had to sharpen the focus on the first ones, and then the first volume and so on, and the second volume and so on. And that came along, and we did go along with that idea, and our general thought was that we would have a volume every 2 or 3 years, or ever. We did do better than that. We thought we would do every 2 years at the start, and now volume two, I see, was published copyright. Well, no, it was copyright in 48. You see, we were working those two volumes pretty much. We then, meanwhile, got, in addition, Anthony Standen and Janet Scott. Gee, that, I don't have her signature on that. Both of whom had considerable technical ability in the field of chemistry, but also in the field of publishing. And so that went along, and here, for example, to take volume 10, the 10th volume came along, and it was copyrighted in 1953, you see. So by that time we were doing better than a volume per year, and that continued on. Ray Kirk was in his early 60s. And unfortunately, and what he intended to do was, when he reached the retirement age of 65, he intended to go full time, work with the encyclopedia. Unfortunately, Ray died, and we went through the first 15 volumes, and the 15th volume also included the index to the first 15, and then we saw that we had lost track of some things. Also, some things came along during the period of our work. So we had two supplements, two supplement volumes, the first supplement came out in 1957. And that, unfortunately, was just after Ray Kirk had died. And I then wrote a slight memoriam to him in the first supplement volume. He died very suddenly, and so he never then had the opportunity of carrying on as the full-time editor of what we, of course, realized was going to be a continuing operation. After he died, after he died, and without any argument or discussion, as I remember, on my part, InterScience paid his widow and me each what amounted to very closely, or a little less than, $1,000 a volume for the work which we had done in this. I think it was a very successful venture from the standpoint of InterScience, and I think it was also a very good part of what InterScience had to offer Wiley, because John Wiley bought them out at just about this time, and so the second edition was then carried on by Wiley and Tony Standen and Janet Scott were the editors. That is, they were the official editors as well as doing all the horse work for the second volume. For the second edition. The third edition, or the second edition, then came along at a much faster speed because it was under the aegis of John Wiley, and a whole staff of people could be put on, and Dr. Martin Grayson was the senior editor, and with him was an associate editor, David Eckroth. We had an editorial board established then of Herman Mark, alphabetically Herman Mark, Othmer, Charlie Overberger, and Glenn Seaborg was the editorial board of the third edition, and it came along at an even faster pace, and went on through in the last volume of it. Was published in 19. The index, for example, to the 24 volumes now. Of the third edition, and the one volume of the supplement was published and copyrighted in 1984. Since that time, and in the last month, that is as of December 1986, Dr. Martin Grayson has left Wiley and will be in another position, and so the new editor has not yet been established. One additional point, is it working?
Oh, yes.
One additional point that was interesting, to which I just did not agree entirely, but of course I had no saying as to the business end of this, was the publication of a concise edition, smaller printing, double column pages, and otherwise condensed. The so-called condensed encyclopedia. And in this, every article has been condensed in, so it's in a single volume of about twice, I would say, the wordage of the any single other volume. This, I think, has the usefulness to me would be for those companies that may have one or more volumes in their main library, but then can have scattered volumes with a condensed around where people can look at it. And then if they want it, they can then get a Xerox or so on from the main library of what they want. many companies, of course, have various many copies. One time years ago, when I was on a involved in a very major patent suit in the federal court in Wilmington, and used the library, was admitted to use, permitted to use the library of the DuPont office, they asked me, would I kindly sign the copy of the first volume of the encyclopedia, and I said, oh yes, which I've done in many cases, and I signed that, and then they brought out three more copies. They had four complete sets in the Argentine. Many years ago, they only had at that time the first and second volume of the encyclopedia. It had been entire of the first set of the encyclopedia, the first edition. And that was so worn, I never saw a book in a library that was more worn than that particular book. I should mention, however, that that was in English, but there was also a Spanish edition published. It came along in the right after the first English edition was finished, and that was an interesting thing to me. I had unconsciously thought that volume 1, volume 2, volume 3 would follow along in Spanish, but of course that's entirely impossible because Spanish alphabetization is quite different than English, and just for example, one simple word like streptomycin is E-streptomycin in Spanish, and so it would have to come under an E instead of out of an S, which we had many aspects of problems here and there with late authors, which is always an editor's, and I remember one particular one. We had asked somebody in Carbide to, I think this was in the second edition, to write the article on acetic acid, and it never came, for the A, and of course AC comes pretty early in the alphabet, so we had a put it under ethanoic acid.
That's good.
So under acetic acid, we said C-ethanoic acid. But those are minor things. The new edition will probably not get a volume out until late 1988. Or maybe 1989, a certain time in between is necessary, I suppose, from sampling the market and so on, judging when it will sell again.
I'd like to go back again to the very early days of this encyclopedia, and you said that Kirk brought Proskauer to you? Did he introduce you to Proskauer?
Proskauer and Decker.
Okay.
Turn off the record a minute. I showed you Ray's statue out there, didn't I? Out there?
Yes.
Up above there. Yeah. That is the mold. It's a wonderful likeness. And the bronze from which this was made for the casting, the bronze one is upstairs, and they were going to throw this out, and I said, well, I got a space up there, it doesn't cost anything, and I couldn't use the space for anything else. Are we working?
Yes. Herman Mark knew Proskauer before this time. Do you think that's how the Kirk made the connection?
Mark came here in the early years of the war, and I don't know how Ray Kirk happened to find, but here in New York, the chemical community is not too big, and they got somewhere or another, and I don't know whether it was Proskauer or Decker that Ray first ran into through Herman. Herman, of course, is another sociable animal that just loves everybody and everybody loves him, and so he knows everybody and so on. So it's entirely possible that it was by way of Herman.
I'd like to come back again, if I may, to those that early topic selection. How did you and Kirk work together in terms of, I mean, did you work smoothly together in terms of making those topic selections and then picking authors for your topics?
I'm not sure that we didn't each one start out with lists and then compare. I'm damn sure I never went through 1,000 topics in my own mind. And of course, it then worked out cut and try, and depending on authors, that is, we would get obviously suggestions of authors. The basic idea was that this would not be a dictionary, in that it wouldn't have 100,000 entries are for dinners. Not 100,000 entries, but we just set out with the idea that we'd probably be able to encompass it. Some of the articles are unduly long, some of them are unduly short, and I can't help but say the same thing as I say about every book. You open it up and you find what you find between the covers. And some articles are very comprehensive in our work, and some of them are treatises on some field, and others are probably insufficient coverage. But obviously, we have to rely on the recommendation of the people that we ask to do the work.
Did you do any editorial work on the documents?
Oh, yes. Ray and I were listed as editors, and we did much of the horse work on the early. We had other people. Immediately, we had a couple of people almost immediately across the street in the back room. But then we moved to another building where we had probably the equivalent of half a dozen offices with a dozen people working on it. As the chore got bigger, obviously, as you start out with, you're very much interested just the first, but then you expand your field and so on. Your point is well taken, though. And I can't remember just how we did do those, but all four of us, Proskauer, Decker, Kirk, and myself, we did sit around these afternoons in Ray's office was where we first met, and kicked the ideas around and who we would ask and so on, and some of this was then done by telephone, of course, some of it by correspondence, as to what the individual authors. However, this soon found a system for much of it. Obviously, the elements, the materials, the compounds, the uses, the physical properties and so on. I mean, you have a certain framework to start with. Then you start with different operations of chemical technology, all of the unit operations of chemical engineering, distillation, evaporation, filtration, and so on, and so on. So by the time adsorption, adsorption, mass transfer, fluidization, and so on, all of the thermodynamics, quantum theory, I mean, some of these things just comes off the top of your head, and it's no trouble to write down the first 50 or 80 or 100 of such topics, and then you fill in. And of course, when you get four people together kicking around a list, why you build it up to where you want. And then what you have to do is start paring these things down and putting more of the individual items into superior items.
What were Standen and Scott's background? You said they had scientific background. Were they chemists or chemical engineers?
I'd just rather not talk about it. I just don't know.
Okay.
Just don't leave
All right.
that question out.
All right.
Standen then did leave, and of course I had nothing to do with the business arrangement. Scott, I mean. Scott did leave and became part of the Webster Dictionary Division with regard to chemistry and related things. Standen was a... I don't know. He had written a couple books... somewhat on the one of them I remember on the humorous side, Science is a Sacred Cow, for example, where he wrote 100 pages or 150 with his tongue in his cheek about the sanctity or whatever it is of science and how we bow very low and sometime adulate science without full recognition of all its not drawbacks but implications. But I if you can ask any other questions, I don't know. I just don't remember. I don't know as I ever knew. I was introduced to Stan first. He came in, and of course by this time. The thing had moved to New York, and
this is Wiley had taken over.
No, Inner Science had an office on Fifth Avenue and someplace in the 20s, and second or third floors, I remember, and we went there. We had an office for a couple of years. In one of the high-rise office buildings, only 100 yards from the old Polytechnic. But when they got moved over there, I lost pretty much track and hardly got over there.
Frame this question. The changeover from Inner Science to Wiley, what... Did that affect your participation anyway?
No. As a matter of fact, Marcel Decker then negotiated a deal with me, Kirk now having been deceased, with regard to the second volume. And in that case, he must have been representing. Wiley, because Wiley was an entire publisher from then on, but they call it the Inner Science Division of, I don't know whether that's, how long that's going to continue or not, but they have other books. Of course, they have the Plastics Encyclopedia, Resins and Plastics, and so on, which is also comes from the Inner Science, and in that case, of course, as you indicate, from Mark's relationship to them.
You said you started without a contract. Did a contract?
No, I never had a contract.
Never had a contract. Mm. That's interesting.
No, we never had a contract, and I just don't remember any discussions or negotiations ever. I wouldn't have expected it from Ray. I'm looking back at myself. I'm a little more, have had much more contact with business arrangements than Ray did. Ray had, as I say, the idea that that he, when he reached 65, which was more or less the end of the first edition, that he would then go and work for InterScience. I don't know whether he knew that it was going to be part of Wiley or not. I never did. No. But anyway, unfortunately, he died.
Was the first edition finished when he...
Well, as I showed you, that obituary was in the first supplement volume, of which there were two.